You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
In the verses right before today's text is what's called Jesus' third passion prediction, where he says, "Look, I don't think you guys get it. Things are going to get ugly, and I'm going to be killed." But once again, the disciples, as Mark presents them throughout his gospel, respond like lunkheads. They refuse to accept what Jesus is telling them and are still clueless about the inevitable consequences of Jesus' preaching and actions. The sons of Zebedee are too busy jockeying for position in the disciple pecking order to get what's really going on. They lobby Jesus for the top spots when he gets to his glory. You can almost hear Jesus do a facepalm and then patiently explain to them again what the whole point of his life and mission truly are.
Our words of wisdom are Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through 45, the Message version.
James and John, Zebedee's sons, came up to him. "Teacher, we have something we want you to do for us."
"What is it? I'll see what I can do."
"Arrange it," they said, "so that we will be awarded the highest places of honor in your glory, one of us at your right and the other at your left."
Jesus said, "You have no idea what you're asking. Are you capable of drinking the cup I drink, of being baptized in the baptism I'm about to be plunged into?"
"Sure," they said, "why not?"
Jesus said, "Come to think of it, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized in my baptism. But as to awarding places of honor, that's not my business. There are other arrangements for that."
When the other 10 heard of this conversation, they lost their tempers with James and John. Jesus got them together to settle things down.
"You've observed how godless rulers throw their weight around," he said. "And when people get a little power, how quickly it goes to their heads. It's not going to be that way with you. Whoever wants to be great must become a servant. Whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. This is what the Son of Man has done. He came to serve, not to be served, and then to give away his life in exchange for many who are held hostage."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
When Pope Francis was in the U.S. back in 2015, his every move was scheduled down to the minute. The entourage all had their instructions, security was in place, and of course, his pontifical Fiat 500 was all gassed up and ready to go. But just look at his face. You just know that he's been up to something. You've probably all heard the stories about Francis sneaking out of the Vatican to just get out and shake off the sense of confinement and take a walk. It was no different on this trip. It wasn't covered by the news, but one night, Francis snuck out of the Vatican embassy in D.C. He flagged down a passing limo, and since you can't really see anything from the back, talked the star-struck driver into sitting in the back while he drove. Well, the Pope hadn't driven for years, so the next thing you know, a cop was pulling the limo over for erratic driving. Needless to say, the police officer, a good Irish Catholic, was surprised when the power window came down and he recognized the Pope. He said, "Excuse me, Your Holiness, would you wait here, please?" He quickly radioed headquarters and said, "Chief, I just pulled over a very important person for erratic driving, but I don't think I can give him a ticket." The sergeant demanded, Who's so important that you can't give them a ticket? The officer said, I don't know. The sergeant said, what do you mean you don't know? I don't know who the passenger is, but their chauffeur is the Pope. What comes across pretty clearly in our passage today is at the heart of the eighth point of progressive Christianity is we commit to a path of lifelong learning, compassion, and selfless love. The whole compassion and selfless love thing is as hard for us today as it was in Jesus' day, and maybe worse. Most of us had the prenatal brilliance to be born into the middle or upper middle class of the United States in the 20th century, where being a somebody is often measured by the privileges and luxuries we can afford. So, taken seriously, Jesus' message can call into question a lot of the status quo that we take for granted. Over and over again, Jesus showed that his priorities had little to do with the privileges that the world affords. They have nothing to do with climbing to the top with power, with dominating others, with how much money one has, or with how many people think you are top dog because you acquired status and power in your little world. It seems to be just the opposite. That's why James and John should make us squirm a bit. They are stand-ins for us. Despite all the time they've spent with Jesus, they still don't get it. Right when Jesus is saying, look, following me is going to be costly, they come to ask a favor about extra perks for working for Jesus. Remember, Middle Eastern hospitality has very specific rules pertaining to honor and status in the community. In another passage, Jesus reminds the disciples to be humble. Don't sit at the right hand of the host and then get moved down. Sit at the end of the table and then you might be asked to move up. But James and John are as dumb as a box of rocks. Yeah, sure, we get it. Now, grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory. Even disciples are not immune to the drive to get on top of what has come to be known in our culture as upward mobility. Now, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with working hard to get what one needs in life. But what we have in our story today is the drive to get ahead of others, get authority over them, and to want to be served at the expense of others. It's natural. It's human nature, feeling secure, in control. To have a superior place helps to overcome the fear of being nobody and fear of being vulnerable. As soon as the other 10 disciples heard about the request made by James and John, they began to get angry. And when Jesus saw the anger in the others, he changed the course of the conversation. He didn't tell James and John that they were wrong or bad for wanting to have special status. According to Mark, Jesus calls a huddle and holds up the tyrannical leadership style of the Gentiles and says, boom, it shall not be so among you. He then describes his own alternative mode of leadership, the upside-down pyramid of greatness, where it's not about being served, but serving. Mark's two verbs for the Gentile style are translated as lorded over and tyrant. The contrast Jesus is making is between two different ways to exercise authority. One is what's normal in our Gentile world, top down. The other, the Jesus mode, is from beneath. Jesus supports those beneath him by getting even farther down than they are to keep them from going under forever. One person who discovered the power and the difficulty of renouncing his privilege and serving others was Mahatma Gandhi. After going to college and becoming an attorney in England, he went on to practice law in South Africa. The apartheid system he encountered is infuriating to him, so he decides to build an ashram to model equality and servanthood in the midst of the oppressive white rule. However, his own wife resisted, having become used to the privileges of an upper-class life.
This is quite a place you got here. And you call it an ashram?
That's right. The word only means community, but it could stand for village or the world.
You're an ambitious man, Mr. Gandhi.
I hope not.
I hear that you also participate in preparing the meals and cleaning the toilets. Is that part of the experiment?
Bar, we will need another place set for Mr. Walker's driver.
I will tell Tara.
Yes, it's one way to learn that each man's labor is as important as another's. In fact, while you're doing it, cleaning the toilet seems far more important than the law. Please, come and join us. You'll need something before your journey back. Would you excuse me, please?
Yeah, sure.
What is it?
Sora was sent to tell me I must rake and cover the latrine.
That's right. Everyone takes their turn.
It is the work of untouchables.
In this place, there are no untouchables, and no work is beneath any of us.
I'm your wife.
All the more reason.
As you command. The others may follow you, but you forget. I knew you when you were a boy.
It's not me. It's the principle. And you will do it with joy or not do it at all.
Not at all, then.
All right, then, go. You don't belong here.
Stop
go,
it.
Leave the ashram. Get out. All together we go.
What are you doing? Have you no shame? I'm your wife. Expect me to go.
What's the matter with me?
You are human. Only human. And it's even harder for those of us who do not even want to be as good as you.
I apologize. I must get back to that reporter.
And I must rake and cover the latrine.
Whenever we widen our circle of concern, we will not only find demands on our resources, but risks to our status. Followers of Jesus cannot expect to be any more successful or popular than Jesus was. Like the first of Jesus' disciples, one of the big challenges of following Jesus is giving up the hope of being favored or being number one. Many Christian groups claim to have special access to God and try to overcome their fear of powerlessness by claiming to be at God's right hand. But they are nothing more than James and John writ large. Jesus is calling us to resist that urge to be recognized and honored by association, and get our hands into real life. Genuine servanthood, genuine concern for other people, includes resisting any forces that would drain them of energy, deny them sustenance, rob them of dignity, or destroy their hope. Now, there may be a few of you who are thinking, "Now, hang on! I don't remember any of this resist evil and injustice at the expense of our own status talk when I was growing up. Being a Christian was what respectable people did. It enhanced our social status in the community." Yes, because that's a message that in our consumer culture sells. You don't hear the televangelist preaching, "Join us, renounce your privileges, and serve those who the culture rejects." Nope, it's "Join us and Jesus will be your rocket sled to prosperity, ease, and victory." While wildly popular as many people's idea of what Christianity is, it's the polar opposite of what Jesus had in mind. But you wouldn't know it if you talk to a lot of people. That's why included in this eighth point is the importance of lifelong learning. In our LTQ program, Eclipsing Empire, Marcus Borg and Dom Crossan agree that the most urgent, the most critical pursuit of the mainline church, if we expect to survive, is adult theological re-education. Not just education, re-education. Adults think that they're educated, and for the most part they are, except in church. In many churches, they need to essentially be deprogrammed. People are seduced into embracing a lunkhead spirituality that says, "Excuse me, you're sitting in my seat," while other elements of Scripture that could really challenge people to change their lives and the world are studiously avoided. Whatever you do, don't read Amos. The Lord says, "I hate your festivals and your sacrifices and all your falderal. You're trampling on the poor while your wives say, 'Bring me more wine.'" You can't read much of that before you realize, wow, this is about us. Our priorities are all out of whack. And where did Jesus get his inspiration for his message? Amos, Isaiah, Jonah, and the most socially radical demands of Hebrew Scripture. In his book, Behold, I Do a New Thing, Kirk Hathaway asks the question, what is the business of the church? The purpose of the church is to transform people, to bring down their self-constructed walls, dissolve their delusions, and help them see God. And how do you do that? One way is through education. You give people a vocabulary to talk about things that really matter. You help people step into the light of a worldview that Jesus plainly teaches, but is often obscured. That we are sent out to practice compassion, to serve, not to be served. Now, there'll always be someone who lives higher up on the mountainside, has a better car, a louder stereo, and in that way, upward mobility is easy. Set your sights and go for it. But as Father Richard Rohr suggests, what followers of Jesus are called to is much harder. Our task is downward mobility. The world's measure of success is status, visible and knowable. The follower of Jesus' success is servanthood, compassion, selflessness, mostly invisible, and known only to those who have no status and no means to make a big deal at any cost. We risk our status. We redirect our resources and energies to those who have less than we do. We appear as fools to those caught up in James and John's world. Let me leave you with this guarantee from the Dalai Lama. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. When Mother Teresa first began her work among the dying on the streets of Calcutta, she was obstructed at every turn by government officials and Orthodox Hindus who were suspicious of her motives and used their authority to harass her and to frustrate her efforts. She and her fellow sisters were insulted and threatened with physical violence. One day, a shower of stones and bricks rained down on the women as they tried to bring the dying to their humble shelter. Eventually, Mother Teresa dropped to her knees before the mob and cried, "Kill me!" in Bengali, her arms outstretched in a gesture of crucifixion. "Kill me and I'll be in heaven all the sooner." Even though the rabble withdrew on that occasion, the harassment increased and went on with even more irrational acts of violence, and louder demands were made of officials to expel this foreign nun. One morning, Mother Teresa noticed a gathering of people outside the nearby temple of the goddess Kali, one of the most holy places for Hindus in Calcutta. As she drew closer, she saw a man stretched out on the street with turned up eyes and a face drained of blood. A triple braid denoted that he was of the Brahmin caste, one of the spiritual leaders of that very temple, but no one dared to touch him because people recognized he was dying from cholera. But Mother Teresa was not deterred. With the help of her sisters, she carried the Brahmin priest to their shelter. Day and night they cared for him, and eventually he recovered physically and became a fierce advocate for Mother Teresa's work. He said, "For 30 years I have worshipped a Kali of stone, but I have met in this gentle woman a real Kali, a Kali of flesh and blood." Never again were stones thrown at Mother Teresa and the other sisters. As progressive Christians, we commit to a path of lifelong learning, compassion, and selfless love. I wish it were all Christians. I really do, because it seems objectively clear that Jesus said, "Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all." But it's not all Christians. Conventional Christianity, and most of the churches we all have grown up in, have been thoroughly compromised. For most run-of-the-mill Christians, it's all about believing the right stuff. It's all about compliance with strict cultural morality and purity codes that fixate on the exact same priorities James and John so tragically embrace in our text today. But Jesus' message is still right there, so obvious for all to see, if we only have the courage to respond. For Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, and calls us to do likewise. And this point, along with the other 7 points of progressive Christianity, is, for me, the work of a lifetime. And yeah, sometimes it can seem like a lonely road, but I, for one, can't go back to the old way. So if what we've focused on in the last 8 weeks makes sense to you too, I hope you'll join me in forging ahead. And despite the confusion and blank looks and resistance from conventional Christians, remember, they've been persuaded that Christianity is all about guaranteeing their personal trip to heaven. Like James and John, if it's not for the recognition or the reward, they don't know what following Jesus is for. They're not far enough along the path to understand that doing what Jesus asks us to do is its own reward. It's simply the right thing to do. So as we wrap up this series, join me in reminding ourselves and recommitting ourselves to the 8 points of progressive Christianity. As progressive Christians, we walk with Jesus, finding wholeness and hope. We seek the sacred in many paths and traditions. We welcome all, no one left out, no one forgotten. We live out our faith through love, courage, and justice. We honor questions more than rigid answers. We work for peace and justice in every place. We care for the earth, God's sacred creation. We keep growing in wisdom, compassion, and selfless love our whole lives long. And for the sake of keeping Jesus' genuine message and vision alive in the world, may it be so. Be well. Hey, and don't forget, if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.